now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Here we go again. It's Shout Out with Matthew Tosh and the one and only Lara Lalamy.
Hello. As we are in the middle of LGBT month, this week's show features the history of drag. Matthew?
Sorry, I was doing my eyelashes. Yes, drag. We also hear from a member of Hidea, a support group for queer Muslims.
We've got the latest instalment from Just Like Us crew.
Plus news, music and a fabulous team. Don't go anywhere. I must apologise if I've blown anyone's eardrums out there. It's got a little enthusiastic with some of the levels there. And good evening, Lara.
Hello, how are you doing?
Well, I'm all right now. I've definitely cleared some earwax after that one.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely, my ears were definitely burst with that. I couldn't really hear much, but...
We're a very enthusiastic show.
Oh, yeah, we want to wake you up, get you excited, get you in it, and then, burst your eardrums, apparently.
Have you survived this wild weather we've had of late?
I'm not really digging it, I'm not going to lie to you.
Do you not like it?
I do not.
Is there something in your genes that you don't like this kind of, your genetic makeup, this wet, damp weather?
It's in my parents' genes and thus has been passed on to me. They're just like, I'm like, what about skiing holiday? They're like, absolutely not, it's cold. So I think it's just within my core DNA to hate cold weather. And funny enough, I used to hate winter. Oh, well, I used to love winter, actually. But then I realised now it's cold and wet and rainy and I don't like it. So summer, here we come.
Lovely. Well, it's not just me and Lara here tonight. We are a team and we have Steph Barnett and Andy Hole with us. Good evening, folks.
Hello. Good evening, all. How are we?
Ticking along. Good. Andy, you're over there. I've put you in the corner of tonight's studio.
Oh, yes. No one puts baby in a corner.
Thank you. It's just a very good film, that is. Dirty Dancing, 1988, 89, I think that is.
Have I missed a cultural quote?
Yeah, of course. Wait, did that go straight over your head?
It did.
Can we all just hold a moment of silence for Matthew's reputation right now? Because it's gone slightly downhill after not knowing a Dirty Dancing basic quote.
You're making an assumption that I had a reputation to begin with.
That's true. I got lost somewhere in Bristol a long time ago, no?
Thank you for your support. Now, we've got really interesting stuff coming tonight because we are going to be talking about the history of drag.
What? Like, I love that. Like, I need to know about more history. I've been learning about African history, Asian history, and the LGBT rights in those. So I'm ready for this drag history, man.
Yeah, well, it's all part of LGBT History Month, of course.
So have you been enjoying it?
I have. And, of course, on Shout Out each week, we've tried to take one different aspect of a history. And we have something else next week. We'll be telling you more about that.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, later in the show.
Can't wait.
But first, we're going to talk about Islam and queerness. And what it's like to be queer and Muslim. And there is a group, Hidea, and they have, it's a relatively new podcast on their website. We'll tell you more about how to get in touch with the organisation. But one of their members has been talking about what it's like to be queer and Muslim. Let's have a listen.
My Five on Shout Out.
My name's Osman and I identify as a LGBT gay Muslim man born and brought up in Scotland, and that's what I call home. I would say as far back as around 6 years old, 7 years old was when I started to feel as if I was different. My attraction to men, I would say probably about 8, 9 years old was when I started to notice that I wasn't the same as the other boys in my school. The earliest memory I can think of was when I was about 9 years old and I was in the playground and one of the boys had bought a catalogue from his home, and about 4 or 5 of us were around this catalogue, and the young chap at the time, he decided to open the pages up to the women's underwear section. Now, once everybody had started to, all the boys were looking at the pictures of the women's underwear. Yeah. I knew at that point that I wasn't interested in that section at all. Uh-huh. In fact, what I wanted to do was to move on to the men's section. Uh-huh. So I waited till the boys had gone, and I kept the catalogue and started to look at the men's underwear section. And at that point, I knew that I was different. I knew that I had feelings for men. Mm-hmm. However, I also knew that it wasn't something that I could tell anybody about, because all the other boys were looking at the women's section and I was looking at the men's. I knew straight away that I was different. So on section 28, I remember watching TV, and I remember being around some of my older cousins, and Margaret Thatcher's speech came on, and I remember my cousins laughing and ridiculing people from the LGBT community, especially the gay community. And I remember sitting there thinking, I just only recently understanding my own self, and I could hear these people that I looked up to talking derogatorily about gay men and laughing, and I could hear elder people in my sort of elders in my community agreeing with Margaret Thatcher. And at that point I started to realise what section 28 was all about, and I knew that I couldn't come out. I knew that being at home wasn't safe anymore for me, that I had to keep myself hidden. And I had watched several programs on TV. I think it was a news program, and I think I remember some a lesbian group who'd hijacked a news reporter maybe, and they were fighting for the rights for LGBT community. But I still was quite young and didn't quite fully understand what the act was about. I think it's important to remember that time, especially it had an impact on me. It didn't allow me to come out. Not only that, I think the people who grew up were scarred with having to internalise their sexuality. Many people couldn't come out because the fear of rejection from their family, from society, because as a whole the newspaper articles were very anti-LGBT. So these people grew up with not being able to be themselves, which resulted in mental health problems. And even to this day, I struggle with mental health, and I think a lot of the younger communities don't appreciate, maybe not appreciate, but empathise with the fact that, you know, a life is a lot more easier than it was back in the 80s, where unfortunately you could have ended up in prison, or even worse, in trouble, or in being attacked for being LGBT. Coming from a Muslim background, there's so many countries, especially Muslim countries, who don't even acknowledge LGBT rights. And I can honestly say that I'm so lucky that I live in the UK, because I can be myself, I can have a relationship, I can lead a somewhat healthy, normal life. Mm-hmm. However, for people, say, in countries like Saudi Arabia, in countries, in certain countries in Africa, it's not the same. They haven't got any rights, living a lie life full of lies, and trying to hide amongst their community. It's so difficult. I'm not out to my family, so I understand how hard it is to be constantly watching your back and trying to be someone you're not. And life's about living your true self, and not being able to live a true life, it's sometimes not worth thinking about. You know, it's not a lifestyle choice, it's who people are, and to accept them. So I think it's important that through education we're able to change not just minds but people's views, and try and create a very tolerant society.
If you have a story you could tell in 5 minutes, get in contact. Visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Well, Well, that was Osman from Hidaya.
So what does Hidaya mean?
Well, it's from Arabic. I looked at this on their website, and it means guide.
Oh, that's such a lovely name.
It's a lovely name. Well, the organisation, it's a charity-based support service for queer Muslims in the UK, offers safe spaces, social meetups, monthly events, emotional and well-being support. Mm. And this is really good. It has a confidential email support service. Now, if you're interested in this and you want to find out more about Hidaya, you can visit hidayalgbt.co.uk. So that's Hidaya, that's HIDAYAH lgbt.co.uk, and you'll also be able to find a link on this week's podcast page of the Shout Out website.
Shout Out
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Ah, you like that?
Yeah, it was nice and slow. And
did you know who
cute.
It was?
Yes, of course I do.
Go on.
It was Fleetwood Mac. I don't know why I did that, but like I just got a bit excited.
Fleetwood. You're trying to do the Fleetwood Mac sort of harmonising, aren't you?
Fleetwood Mac. Yeah.
Okay. That's a track. Never Going Back Again.
Hopefully.
No, we're all about going forwards as well. Speaking about going forwards, although it does look back. Because it's the news. The news team are in.
Oh. We are.
My favourite people. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hans and Terry.
I don't say that very often.
Very good. And you're armed with your scripts. Are you standing by?
We are indeed. Standing by.
Let's do this thing then.
This is Shout Out News on Thursday, the 20th of February.
LGBTQ and many other minority media watchers are observing with interest the pressure for change in the way in which British newspapers behave in the wake of the sad death of television presenter Caroline Flack. Ms. Flack, who was not without her own personal problems, sadly took her own life at the weekend. Ms. Flack was the presenter of a reality television programme for the ITV network called Love Island. A lot of commentary on television and on social media has been about the role of the tabloid newspapers and negative internet discussions in causing Ms. Flack's passing. Cultural commentator Joan Smith, who also sits as an advisor to government on London's Violence Against Women and Girls Forum, wrote in The Guardian that the tabloid right-wing papers were quite rightly now back in the dock, and added that they had been willing to hound a vulnerable woman. Ms. Smith's sentiments were echoed by a wide variety of groups, including people who work with people with mental health issues, physical disabilities, refugees, and migrants and trans people. People who are concerned about the Wild West nature of the British press, where opinion is frequently reported as fact, said that they respect the argument about freedom of press speech, but that in today's polarised world, free speech is often a last resort shield used by people who want to argue that certain minorities do not deserve any rights. In the new book, How to Be Fascist, which is selling well at Waterstones and Foyles in Bristol, Michaela Mergler argues that an essential strategy of the far political and cultural right wing is to denude free speech of its classical 19th century roots of being free discourse underpinned by rationalism in favour of the right to spread disinformation, lies and deliberate falsehoods about vulnerable or minority groups. The phenomena of the Twitter storm or of people shouting at each other on trashy tabloid talk radio services was never envisaged by even the most radical free speech advocates of the Enlightenment period, even though they would sometimes use fruity language in the broadcast papers about political opponents. Some people are hoping that the public backlash against the papers over the Flack case will allow for some curtailment of their supposed freedom and rein in some of the most reactionary commentators that spent column inches attacking immigrants, gay or trans people, vegans and other groups in society. From the point of view of the internet, trans people in particular have shared how social media platforms have been used by gangs of critics determined to shut down and drown out trans voices. One trans woman writing on the comments threads at popular gay newswire Pink News explained that the behaviour of some lesbian separatist feminists was, in her experience, probably worse than that of political far-right wing because of the way in which anti-trans activists would pile in to target specific transgender individuals. With the government currently proposing to regulate larger websites such as Facebook via the existing broadcasting regulatory board Ofcom, some are hoping that the activities of the most extreme trans-critical feminists will also be subject to moderation.
Now, a lively protest on climate change involving many rainbow flags took place in Bristol on St Valentine's Day. Around 500 largely young people took part in the demonstration, which wound its way through the Horse Fair and Cabot Circus districts, but did not seriously disrupt people's shopping or leisure activities. Indeed, our reporters noticed many people taking photographs of the placards, banners and the samba band, which seems to be a regular feature of most environmental and left-wing demonstrations. The protest was part of a day of climate action, mainly organised by the Extinction Rebellion Network, but also involving a wide range of other organisations who don't always see eye to eye. We noticed placards from the Youth Strike for Climate Justice, the Socialist Workers' Party, the Socialist Party of England and Wales, the Greens and the local Anarchist Federation, as well as non-aligned Greens and trade union networks. Extinction Rebellion is not without its critics, even from within the radical milieu in which it mostly functions. For example, the Communist Party has sharply criticised it for having Malthusian tendencies, that is, believing that humans have overpopulated the planet, a position that sometimes feeds into right-wing discourses about population control. And trade unions working in the health sector have occasionally accused the group's more direct action wing of delaying NHS staff from getting to work promptly and thus impacting patient care.
Disability magazines this month have some news for people living in Devon and in receipt of benefits. In the southwest, Unite Community are starting a group for people in receipt of benefits to get together, defend rights and campaign for what they say needs to be a decent benefit system. Millions goes unclaimed every year because we aren't told what we can get, they say. The group notes that campaigning has already made universal credit less harsh. The launch meeting is on Tuesday the 25th of February from 1 till 3 in the Unite offices on Exeter Street in Plymouth, just past the Job Centre. The meeting takes place on the ground floor, which is wheelchair accessible. Fair trade tea, coffee and vegetarian sandwiches will be available. There are a considerable number of our community who are in receipt of benefits, often because of prejudices that deny them the chance to work. They may be disabled or older, or may have an appearance that puts some employers off, such as being a goth, heavily pierced or a gay skinhead. A considerable number of trans people are out of work because they find pursuing their career difficult in many areas, although the situation in larger, more liberal cities is improving.
Now, the Guardian newspaper reports that two men who broke into the much-loved LGBTQ bookstore Gaze the Word in London's lovely Bloomsbury district were caught red-handed when they got drunk on a left-behind bottle of Prosecco. Although the police are not clear whether the attack was homophobically motivated, the hapless burglars, having stolen money earmarked for the gay youth charity Mosaic, spotted the bottle of bubbly and proceeded to help themselves, thus giving the police crucial time in which to act and catch them on the premises. Yuli Lainart, who represents Gaze the Word, revealed that no stock had been taken from the shop, which has been serving our communities since 1979. One of the men was handed down a six-month jail term, which was broadly welcomed by London's gay community, who Mr. Lainart said had rallied round the bookshop once again. If you want to express your support to Gaze the Word, which is the country's only all-gay bookstore, then you can reach them at 66 Marchmont Street in London. Now, several LGBT-friendly bookstores have been targeted in the last couple of years by the extreme political right. Gaze the Word had its windows broken. Liverpool's News From Nowhere, which supplies the Shout Out quarterly book reviews, was invaded by the English Defence League, and the Socialist Workers' Party bookstore Bookmarks off Oxford Street was ransacked. LGBTQ activists have called on the community to unite to defend these spaces.
BBC Radio 6 Music reports that a love letter between two men dating from the 1920s has gone on display at the National Archives as part of its Valentine's Week of celebrations. In the 20s, gay men were effectively outlawed by the state and could find themselves in real trouble if their relationships came to light. This period was slap bang in the middle of the reign of Labouchere Amendment, a clause in legislation that made homosexuality illegal between men and punishable by imprisonment. The law had been enacted in 1885 and would stay on the statute books until 1967, although its effects were arguably still being felt in the 1980s. Also on display is a love letter from Ramsay MacDonald, the first Labour Prime Minister back in the middle 20s.
Well, that's your lot for these new stories and much, much more. Check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Hans Peregrine
and Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Well, we should know better than to bring drag artists into the studio, lip-syncing perfectly. We'll tell you more about who was behind all that, but great track there. Aretha Franklin, I Say a Little Prayer.
They were lip-syncing, I was just pure singing, to be fair. Out of tune, of course.
I was looking across the studio, because we have three very important guests in the studio. We're going to be talking now about the history of drag, and it gives us great pleasure to welcome Claire Lowe from Wig in a Box Promotions,
hello.
Aled Osborne, who is a friend of the show and a voice of the show. You can say hello, Aled.
Hi.
Hello. You might know him as Miss Beaver. And we have James Wilkinson from Queen and Country Magazine.
How do you do?
Very good, very good. Thank you all of you for coming in. So I'm going to start with Claire, first of all.
Hello.
Because you've done quite a bit of research. It's a big area of interest, isn't it, the history of drag?
Well, yeah. So I'm a promoter in Bristol. I've got a promotions company called Wig in a Box Promotions, and I put on around 4 or 5 drag shows every month. So it's definitely a passion project. Drag has always been a massive interest of mine, and just gender expression in general has been a really fascinating subject within my life, but also like something I've got into more and more as I've got older.
So it's come from a personal angle to start with, or has
definitely
it always been an area of interest?
It was a personal angle from being a teenager and wanting to kind of play with gender a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into a full kind of blown obsession when I'd seen films like Rocky Horror and Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and Paris is Burning, and
just
all those kind of things.
Just quickly, what was your first thought when you saw a drag queen?
I want to do it was the first thought,
because
I never identified as female in a way, mm-hmm. I didn't really like looking really feminine, but I loved like that kind of take on femininity. And then as I explored drag more and I saw kind of the punk movements in the 70s and people playing with it more and things like Paris is Burning, where it turns into an absolute celebration of just who you are, that was when I was kind of like, oh, everything kind of clicks, like where my place in the world is. And then as I kind of grew older and got into events organising, I suddenly was like, why am I not doing drag shows? So then started to do drag shows.
So tell us a bit about the history then. Like, I want to know some facts so I can read them off.
Okay, so you can copy them.
Basically I'm just going to copy you. Yeah.
So obviously it kind of came from Shakespeare, probably is where everyone kind of thinks that it came from, because it was, boys dressing as girls, etc. But vaudeville's where I really got interested in it. So you've kind of got these like kind of gender, I'm trying not to swear, gender playing with characters. There was actually one who earned more than Charlie Chaplin at the time. Yeah. His name was Julian Illinge, I think. I can't pronounce anything. But that was like a really cool time, because that was when people suddenly were seeing men dressed as women as like actors. And then came something in the 30s, which was called the pansy craze, which is something I find really interesting and was kind of forgotten about because it was pre-war and was like far more kind of what we would see now as like pantomime dames, that side of things. So quite a British kind of way of being in drag.
And were these characters at these times, were they a tongue-in-cheek take on the other gender, so to speak? So
Think definitely there's obviously issues when you go into the past about that side of it. There was definitely parody that makes myself uncomfortable still to this day. But I also think that it was the start of playing with gender, and also the start of playing with what femininity was and taking kind of the mickey out of how silly it was what women were expected to be.
I'm just going to bring Aled in here at this point, because you talk about the uncomfortableness of playing with, maybe a male playing a female character. But Aled, I mean, this is something that drag artists do all the time, isn't it? So where do you find that balance?
I don't ever kind of come across the fact that I'm trying to be a woman.
No.
I'm not a woman. I can't draw on their experiences. They have a very, very different lived experience to me. And I'm never there to say, I am a woman and this is what we do as as women. I see it as, for me personally, it's just an extension of my personality that I don't get to express in my day-to-day life. So whether that is more... whether that is more flamboyant or more extravagant or more extra than what I already am, then that is actually
possible.
If it is possible, it's kind of like me on 20,000 Red Bulls. but like, that is what I see as drag. And I, like, I always feel at my most confident and my most attractive when I'm in drag. I say that at times she feels like I feel the most sexy I ever feel when my weave is did, my lashes are on, and I'm
Reach.
In it, and I'm in a gown that is
10/10.
Yeah, like figure hugging. I can't breathe. I'm breathing through my ears. like that is, and even though I feel like the sexiest, I'm not sexual. Yeah. When I'm in drag, I just, it gives me that, it's the only time I kind of look at myself and go, wow.
It's almost an escapism, do you think?
Yeah, yeah.
From the kind of everyday.
Yes.
Where did you get your influences from? Because Claire mentioned Paris is Burning, which is really important because it includes a lot of black and BME drag queens. Yeah. And I think they're kind of forgotten. And especially in nowadays, a lot of drag kings are forgotten as well in this movement, and drag kings are so instrumental. So what has been your greatest kind of influence in terms of your drag?
My influence, like my biggest influence, is probably like women is my biggest influence. Like some of the most incredible people that I've either met or I've looked up to, most of the time have been women. So... my drag, I would say, is kind of more comedy, like led.
Tongue in cheek, kind of.
Yeah. Kind of sharpness, banter. So Paris is Burning and the whole kind of ball scene with the reed and the throwing shade, that had a massive influence. Joan Rivers had a massive influence. And then your old, like the Danny LaRue's, the Lily Savage, the Tu Wong Fu's, the Priscilla's, the Regina Fong, who were massive, massive characters in kind of the back in the day type drag queens. And back in the day for me would have been like, not as back as the Vaudevillians. But a kind of, the comedy side of it is probably where I... get most of my influences from. And kind of now, I don't know whether they're an influence, but I make it part of what I do is to try and... drag is inherently political, and I don't think that you can be as an effective drag queen if you're not political. For a start, we're usually a man in a dress, which... which most of society doesn't like. But for me, like... a lot of our movement started with drag queens of colour, trans women of colour. And I think as a movement now within the LGBTQIA plus communities, those people are being left behind in a large portion, whether they're trans or whether they're BME or whether they're both. They are being left behind in the conversation. And I think it's then our kind of social responsibility as a movement or as a drag collective to bring these people up with us, because it was the ball mothers in the 80s and the 90s that provided queer people probably their first ever safe spaces. It was a trans woman of colour that that threw that first brick at the Stonewall riots, which you can look at as the first
Marsha
Pride.
P. Johnson, just to in case anyone doesn't know.
Go on my Facebook. I wore her face on my t-shirt on the Brohade Cabaret stage last year. Like, if it wasn't for her and if it wasn't for other mothers like her at that time, where would we be as a community?
It's amazing.
That brings me to Claire, actually, because I just want to bring up the whole, because you're talking about forgotten voices. I wanted to bring up the fact that drag kings are now an up and coming kind of movement, but it doesn't really get as much light. So what do you kind of feel about the drag king scene? Because I love drag kings.
I love drag kings as well. Drag kings for me have brought a whole new element to what I do and to create and curate shows. Drag kings always bring like so much creativity to the table. And as a bisexual person, I've also always been interested in like the Parisian lesbian bars from the like 1920s and 30s, and drag kings there looked dapper AF. And I very much am influenced
sexy,
by that. So yeah, drag kings in Bristol, we've got things like Brizzle Boys who like bring the game all the time. They're wonderful. But also the scene in London is absolutely incredible for drag kings. Oh, we've got
it.
Chio.
It really is.
We've got
Romeo.
Them all. Went to Juice Bosk. Yeah.
I've got Romeo's a good friend of mine, but also their partner Jada has a king alter ego called Jerome. And if you've never seen Jerome, it is an experience, I tell you.
It really is. I was turned on in so many different ways.
In ways you don't expect.
I was. Like, when I saw Romeo, like the last time I saw Romeo, I was like, oh damn, like I am thinking things that I don't think I could ever think. I was like, squeeze me.
My jaw was on the floor. I was like dribbling. I couldn't really understand it.
Listen, I hate to interrupt your bodily functions here.
There's so many going on.
So many men always interrupt them.
I'm going to bring in James Wilkinson from Queen Country Magazine. I mean, you featured drag artists quite a bit, haven't you?
Yes, we have actually. And actually, our first cover back in, oh, God knows when, a couple of years ago, Cheddar Gorgeous, now well known in Manchester. And she's been all over the telly. And I wouldn't be surprised if she doesn't pop up at next series of Drag Race UK. I led with that campaign as a sort of bright, colourful countryside sort of photo shoot. So because Queen and Country is all about the kind of rural community, and for more aimed at the LGBT community in rural communities rather. So Cheddar and Anna, who worked collectively and now as part of a part of a bigger drag group, which the name's gone now, but
Family Gorgeous,
thank you for saving me on that one.
Anytime.
But there's many organizations in Bristol, isn't there? There's Brizzle Boys and
all over lovely the smaller towns as well. And there was Dame Kitty, who was in Hertfordshire, I think, and we interviewed her as well. She actually did my 30th birthday, so that was quite an experience in itself.
Wow.
We've got hopefully another one coming up, another interview opportunity with Cherry Licker, who's hosting Drag Race Portsmouth this year as well.
So how do people get involved in Wig in the Box? Tell me all about it. How do I contact you? Tell me the information.
So I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Wig in a Box. To get involved, I do casting calls every 3 months. So I also take people from like just started. So I'm starting a thing called, I can't even remember what I'm calling it now. I've got so many shows.
Like an early career sort of thing.
But Upstarts Cabaret. That's what I'm calling it. That's starting in April, which is for existing people who haven't actually done hosting before can try that out, but also new performers, as in they haven't ever even put on a dress but they've been doing it in their bedroom, can come along, get on the stage and just try it out. So yeah, it's a constantly evolving thing.
Sounds amazing.
Fantastic. Well, listen, what we'll do, we'll put the links to those Queen of Country as well on the shout out website. I'm so sorry, we've actually run out of time. We've gone over.
You
the producer's waving
drag
at me.
Very good at talking.
Who knew?
Who would have thought that?
So listen, thank you very much. Ali Osborne, James Wilkinson and Claire Lowe, thank you all for coming in. I'm sure this is a topic I certainly would like to revisit. But right now, though, some very familiar drumming in the background, and it's not necessarily what you think.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Blinding Lights there. That's Carade's Take On Me remix. You might recognise a bit of aha there. And that is The Weeknd. Now, you're listening to Shout Out with Matthew Tosh and Laura Lalamy. And if you are wondering about what's happened to the music, you're listening on the podcast, well, there are live and podcast versions of the show. You can listen again to the podcast, which doesn't feature the music, of course, by going to our website, which is shoutoutradio.lgbt. And we'll put all the links to tonight's show and all the links to the external websites on there as well. Right now, though, it is time for our monthly instalment from the Just Like Us crew.
Just Like Us, for LGBT young people.
Hello, Sarah. Happy February.
Hey, James. Happy February to you too.
We're recording this on Valentine's Day. Isn't that exciting?
Lovely and romantic way to spend it.
Love is in the air. Not for me. I'm single. Anyway, what have you been up to since we last caught up?
God, what have I always forget everything I've done in the month when you ask that.
Yeah.
I've just generally been living in Berlin, been chilling, been getting used to the.
You've really been out here.
It's really happening. What about you?
Also, not much. I'm ill at the moment, which is why you can hear this fun rasp in my voice. I'm even creakier than usual. All right. What are we going to talk about this month, Sarah?
Well, it's LGBT History Month, so we thought we had to give that a little shout out. So that's a theme for this month. And we're just going to talk a little bit about the history of LGBT History Month and where we think it's going in the future, stuff like that, all that fun stuff.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
Starting at the start, LGBT History Month is actually, we were both saying, we thought it was older than it is.
Yeah, it feels like it. Maybe it's just because of the word history. It swindled us.
it only started in February 2005. Can you believe?
I actually never even connected the fact that it was a reaction to the abolition of Section 28 in 2003. Like, that makes so much more sense in my head as to why we have it. But I guess we're kind of lucky in the sense that we've, in some ways, grown up with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the overall aim of LGBT History Month is to like, promote equality and diversity for the benefit of the public. And it's actually was started as a Schools Out UK project, so it's mostly focused in schools.
We've got a little note here. Weirdly, I didn't know that Scotland repealed Section 28 3 years before the rest of the UK.
Yeah, go Scotland.
Wild.
Yeah, and it's actually, so that means it's actually 20 years, this year's event is actually 20 years since the repeal of Section 28.
Yeah.
In Scotland, which is cool. Let's be more like Scotland. So yeah, because it's 20 years since the repeal of Section 28 in Scotland for LGBT History Month, their theme is what have we learned? Which I think is a really great, I think it's a great point to like take stock and also look at the issues that we want to solve in the future and stuff like that. But also to celebrate LGBT History Month, which is very exciting, JLU has launched a social media campaign, and I've been seeing it. They've been tweeting a different LGBT plus role model every day. Yeah, and there's been a really good range. There's been from the more niche or people that I didn't know, like Anne Lister, who is apparently known as the first modern lesbian, who she was a writer and a landowner. And then there's Alan Turing, and then there's more modern day icons like Monroe Bergdorf, Janelle Monáe, and
Janelle Monáe came out as non-binary very recently. Yeah, is that exciting. I think that's since our last podcast. Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah.
And you can follow Just Like Us on Twitter at Just Like Us UK if you want to see that campaign.
We also thought this would be a good time to talk about some of our role models in terms of the LGBT community and, you know, just people who have like inspired us, I think. When I saw that we were going to talk about this, one of the first people that came to my mind, which will be no shock to James, is Mary Oliver, actually. She's been a big theme for me recently.
Somebody bought you a great book of Mary Oliver poetry for your birthday.
Yeah, so I actually kept just seeing Mary Oliver quotes around and being like, why did everything she write like hit me in such a different way? And then I went on her Wikipedia page into the personal life section. Turned out that she's a lesbian, so that makes a lot more sense. And she's just a really great poet who I think she's fantastic anyway, but also in terms of exploring love between women, I think some of her poems are just very like tender in a great way and in a way that you don't normally see for lesbians, where everything can be very sexualized and put in a certain light. James, I've given you some time to think of your own one. Who's your LGBT?
I didn't need to spend much time thinking about it because I know who I'm going to say.
It's me, isn't it?
No, it's not. You're more of an LGBT enemy of mine than an icon. My LGBT role model, she's not LGBT, but she is Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh, yes.
Because I saw her in concert very recently, and you're going to see her soon.
Yeah, that's actually really exciting. I've had so many people message me saying it was like the best crowd that they'd ever been in, and like very accepting and lovely, which is great.
No, genuinely, like I remember I went at one point to like get some water from the back of the venue, and like the proportion of gay men there was higher than any gay club I've been to, genuinely.
I love that.
Like, it was all LGBT people. It was amazing. I don't know why she's such an icon for the community, but she really is.
I feel like this is a real theme as well with there's certain people who just lately like become icons in the gay community, and then their career seems to get kind of a second wind, and it's really great that they just then get celebrated in this way. It's so nice.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
So we also thought we'd talk a little bit about the future of the LGBT plus community, because even though this is a great time to take stock and look at our past, I think it's important, especially when we're talking to young people, to look at where it's going. Because I think it's easy. I remember hearing a lot when I was younger about Stonewall and stuff like that, which felt very relevant to me, but also there was some distance there, you know? I don't know. I was like, oh, wow, this year? That was so long ago.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's an interesting debate that the LGBT community is always having about like finding the right pathway between sort of like assimilation, to use a fancy word, versus like carving out sort of our own spaces. We've talked a little bit about this before, like sort of an expectation of LGBT people to be queer while sort of being quote unquote respectably queer, like in a way that is inoffensive to sort of cisgender heterosexual society.
Definitely. And I think that is definitely moving towards LGBT people being more unapologetic than they've ever been in some ways. And I think that is one thing I was thinking about, was the idea of everyone's relationship with labels, and how I feel like in the last few years it's become so much more acceptable to not have a label or like a box that you fit into really neatly. And I think that's really healthy. I think you look at celebrities at the moment like Harry Styles, who don't label their sexuality, and and I think it's really important to kind of realise that there's a bit more freedom within it than having to tick a box and say, oh, yes, I'm a lesbian. And I think that appeals a lot to young people, because it's just a lot freer and doesn't fit in with historical ideas of what sexuality should be, I guess, and being defined in that way.
You're listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people.
This is our last episode.
Last episode. Cue the sad music.
Which is sad. Sarah and I are moving on from the hosting position. We've enjoyed it very much.
We've gotten old and wrinkled, and I think we should leave on.
We are no longer LGBT young people. We are
LGBT
old
people. Yeah, so from next month, you'll have two brand spanking new podcast co-hosts. Will be so great, and they'll carry the torch, and it'll be great.
So thank you, everyone, for listening to us. And see you on the flip.
Was that your alternative to see you next month? Okay.
All right.
See you on the flip, I guess.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Just Like Us, the monthly show for LGBT young people. The music was by Twisteria. We come into schools too. Young people, teachers and parents can find us at www.justlikeus.org.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
We like to keep it very pure on this show, and that was the Lightning Seeds.
No, that was, I loved that. It was very calming, and is it not to the 80s?
I think so. Oh, just there's a yes in the corner.
I'll take it because I know nothing about that period. So
1989.
Oh.
Very specific.
Good year.
So I just wanted to have a little bit of a talk about something we're doing at the University of Bristol, which is basically we have started to put together like three different films. One of them on the history, LGBT history of Africa, the Middle East and Asia. And I think it's really important for us to, again, understand our history and the path that our ancestors kind of walked on, so we can kind of begin understanding the path we're walking on now. Because I think, I don't know about anyone else in here, but when I was growing up, I generally thought I was abnormal and it wasn't normal to be gay. When I realised we've been here for centuries. And in particular, what I found quite interesting in terms of, because we've been talking about gender today, was the fact that some of the African gods and goddesses were particularly goddesses. So the goddess Mut and the goddess Sikmet. So the goddess Mut was the goddess of motherhood, and Sikmet was the goddess of war. And they were both depicted with erect penises. So there was a lot of gender fluidity back in those times. They didn't really consider parts of a female and parts of a male and assign those to be binary.
which I found fantastic. So, and it's been lovely knowing about my own African past, because I am part Nigerian. I would never say full because my mum would kill me. But also, it's just lovely knowing about that whole history. And so, if you want to get involved, it's on the, it will be on our website and on our Instagram, which is
that way on the Kiki Bristol.
Oh, right. No. Or so it'll be Bristol BME. Okay. So yeah, if you want to follow us and hear about it, come join.
Bristol BME, you heard all about it here. Thank you for that, Laura. Thank you very
exclusive.
Much.
Exclusive.
Well, yeah, another ancient Egypt. Yeah. It's always really interesting,
gorgeous.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Gorgeous culture.
Indeed. Well, I'm glancing at the studio Sandfield hourglass and I notice it's almost time to end the show.
And there is just enough time to give you a little teaser that on next week's show, Shout Out, we'll be looking at the history of fetish.
Well, that's bound to be an interesting one. Bound? See what I did there?
Yes, but don't call us. We'll call you.
Well, thank you, Laura. You've been listening to Shout Out with Laura Lalamy and Matthew Tosh. The executive producer is Steffi Barnett, and the programme is broadcast from the BCFM studios in Bristol. We'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, thank you, everyone, and goodbye.
Bye.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.